So everyone, welcome to season three. This is episode eight. We're nearing the end of the season. And I'm excited to, as always, to talk with the wonderful, fantastic, amazing Kelly. Always learn something from you in every one of these episodes. So I know today we were going to talk about grief. As you know, as a couple months ago, I lost my mom, and it's just been difficult. It's been really, really difficult as my dog is barking. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you don't hear that in the background. Yeah, it's just been really difficult. I think the one thing that's really, I'm just trying to like figure out how to slowly move forward and deal with the world. I guess the one thing that consistently has helped me is reading about grief and doing research about it. Like, I'm just like constantly like reading about people's experiences, things, people's quotes about grief, all types of things to just kind of get by. But I've emotionally, like, these have been like, they're moments, it's not every day, but like the lowest moments like that I've felt emotionally like in my life. So after that uplifting intro, Kelly, I was just wondering about your experiences with grief.
How do I start? I'm a Scorpio. People often equate Scorpios with a lot of morbidity, like just being kind of morbid, embracing the dark side of things. So I think I've always kind of had I don't want to say a fascination, but I guess an interest in death and dying. I have considered becoming a death doula. I think it's something I would be comfortable with. And I'm currently taking I passed my mental health first aid. I already have that certification, but I'm going to do the grief first aid as well. And I think some of that has come through my own experiences with grief. With my dad died, it's almost 13 years. It'll be 13 years in January. Mm-hmm. And during that process, you know, this like my own emotions, my sister's emotions, and family and friends and things. And I went to a grief like support group, which was actually probably the most helpful thing that ever happened to me because it explained, it helped to normalize everything mm-hmm. for me. So I took care of my dad for about 5 years before he died. Mm-hmm. He had Parkinson's. And so I was with him the whole time that he declined. And I was really the only caretaker because my sister lived in a different province. She still does. And my mom had separated from him. And so she wasn't taking care of him. So it kind of all fell on me. We had him in a care home because I couldn't physically take care of him. Like, and there's all that, you know, the issues around that where people were judging me for what I was able to do and, you know, saying that I should have taken him in and stuff like that, where I lived in like a second floor apartment and he obviously couldn't walk up and downstairs. Like, he was in a wheelchair, yeah. You know, like there's all sorts of things. And I'm like, what, you were expecting me to wash his ass? Is that what you think I'm trained for? I was 25. Like, what was, you know, like, am I supposed to be the one doing that?
Yeah.
I'm not a nurse. And it's my dad. Anyway, I did everything short of the physical caretaking that I could physically do and advocated for him and made sure he was well taken care of and all that stuff. But even though you know somebody's going to die, mm-hmm. it's still a shock. And that was, I think, what kind of normalized it for me when I went to the grief counseling, was because, you know, people will often be like, well, if it happens suddenly, that's a shock. And if you know the person was going to die, it's not a shock. Or since you know the person's going to die, maybe you can mentally prepare yourself ahead of time. But that's not what happens. That's not the case. That's not true. And the grief counselor kind of normalized it in the sense that even if you know somebody's sick and they're going to die, you still never know exactly when. So it's still a shock.
Yeah.
And there's no way that you can go ahead and prepare yourself and start mourning before they die because they're not dead. It's not the same. So I always found that kind of interesting. I think it was helpful for me to understand that. And for me, it hit me physically. I was breastfeeding my son at the time, and there was like a week where I was hardly producing any milk. I thought that I was totally going to dry up. I was concerned because it affected his health, right? If I can't feed him, you feel like you have the flu. I don't know about you, how you felt, but I felt like I had I felt like I was physically ill. Like I couldn't eat.
Yeah. For 3 days, I had absolutely no appetite whatsoever. Actually, it was probably longer than that. And I never experienced that. Like hearing you talk about the physical symptoms, that's been something I've been thinking about. About a couple weeks ago, I made an appointment with my doctor because I'm worried about the impact. And I always feel like mental health leads to physical health. So I'm worried about how does grief impact the physical body? And I want to read up on it. And so I just wanted to, check in with my doctor and seeing what should I be doing in this time to, if there is anything I can do. My body, I woke up today, my body is just so tight. My body has never been tighter. My muscles have never been tighter. In my life. So I've been thinking about that a lot.
No, but it's totally normal. It feels awful, but it's totally normal. and I felt like I had the flu, except I didn't have a fever, but I just felt like you're in pain and your heart breaks. When people talk about heartbreak, that was the first time I felt my heart break.
Yeah.
You actually feel like it hurts. It actually hurts your heart. And I would say that if there's any consolation, that the first year is the worst to me. The first year, once you get past that first year, the first year is just awful. And it starts to get a bit easier. And birthdays used to affect me for quite some time because my dad always used to call me on my birthday. He used to be the first person to call me in the morning. So I'm going to cry. But you see, the fact that it's been 13 years, it's still things that random things will just hit you. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just wave of...
Yeah.
And you're one day you're fine. And then for me, it's for a while, I'd say it doesn't happen so much anymore. But I had, when I was taking care of him and when he was sick, I was going to the hospital frequently. And often that meant that I would be with him and then I would follow behind the ambulance as they were taking him to the hospital in my car. And for the longest time, anytime I was driving behind an ambulance, it would remind me of that, So.
Yeah. It's just any time, it just feels any time something can just hit you. And then it just brings me to a place and it's I have no control of it. It just seems grief is just taking me places. and I just have to, I don't know if I just have to, I feel I have to accept it in that moment because I don't think there's anything I can do about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, it sucks. How about this? Yeah. It sucks.
Definitely
it
sucks.
Feeling bad, right? It sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to feel your feelings, I find it goes a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the pain won't last quite as long if you just kind of accept it when it comes.
Yeah.
I think the comparison of when my great aunt died 2 years ago, I was okay, I cannot cope with today. It was this shit. Everything was just kind of shit for a bit. And I went upstairs. I told my husband, I'm like, look, I can't. I'm just going to go upstairs. And I went upstairs and I stayed in my bed and I was sleeping. And I got up and then I was like, I can't even go downstairs and make food. So I asked my husband to bring me a sandwich and he made me a sandwich. And that was to me, it was an important progress because I finally let somebody take care of me.
Hmm.
I accepted the fact that I was in grief. And it was okay. And I'm going to sit here and cry and feel about it. And I'm going to let somebody take care of me during this time as well. And so it didn't last as intensely and as long as it has in the past for other losses. Because I think before I used to kind of try and suppress it. I used to try and stop it. I used to be I'm not going to cry. And I find that if you do that, I would end up getting like a migraine later or something, right? Because it's like it's all being held inside. Whereas if I just let it, let myself cry, let myself get over it, it doesn't hurt for as long.
Yeah, like it's interesting. Before this, these last couple of months, I always was like somewhat envious of people that like cried on whether it was a regular or semi-regular basis, because it was very difficult for me to do. But like that has definitely changed these last couple of months. Like the tears have come out like so much, and at times when I just, you know, just not, I can't anticipate when it's going to happen. I guess the last couple of weeks have been a little bit, I don't know if better, but I haven't been crying as much. Just constantly feel the sadness. It's like it's a sadness inside me. It just never seems to leave.
Yeah. I think with a lot of big emotions, finding a way to get it out of your body, whether that's through exercise or dance or crying or punching something, like something, like a pillow, not a person. I don't know, go boxing, maybe that helps. I don't know. You know, a lot of people take up running and things like that. You run, yeah. But like finding a way to get that energy out of your body in a healthy way, because it has to come out. It's going to come out. And if it doesn't come out in a healthy way, it will come out in pain, in migraines, in like upset stomach, diarrhea, that kind of stuff, right? Yeah. And then I think, you know, the whole thing, like the book there, The Body Keeps the Score, we hold it inside us and then it ends up making us worse, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Or sick in some other way.
One of the things that I've experienced since then is, and I feel shame about it, is that prior to this experience, I've had other people pass in my life that I was pretty close to, but it was nothing like this experience, in the sense that like when people lost, you know, other people, they passed away, whatever people's beliefs are, like I didn't really feel it to the extent that I do now. And now when I hear about anyone, like just in the last couple months, it's like I like pause and stop and feel it so intensely. I'm wondering, did that change for you in terms of, you know, after your father, like hearing about other people's losses?
Yeah, because grief is a club that you join that nobody knows when they're going to join, and nobody really wants to join it. But once you join it, you realize, once you're with all the other people who have lost somebody like really close to them, because it's not the same. I mean, my grandparents died and stuff like that, and I was sad. It wasn't quite the same as when you're, I'd say, like, for me, like, when my father died and when my great aunt died, those were two big, big losses. Like, those were some of my favorite people, or people I was closest to. So I have an interesting story, because I didn't understand until my father's funeral how important funerals were. And it meant a lot to have, like when my dad died, like just all sorts of random people that I had never met, that I did not know, showed up. And like people, you know, because he was a teacher towards the end of his life. So people who showed up were like, yeah, you know, your dad taught me math. He was the first person to explain it in a way that I understood. And it was super cool. It was super touching to meet these people. Like, and it was such a wide array of people from like all ages, all like walks of life kind of thing, that like the funeral helped me see, I guess, the impact that my father's life had on other people, not just me. And so since then, I've kind of been like, I make a point to go to funerals and tell people that I'm there, so that they know like how important that person was. Or the even concept of support, just supporting the people, even if you didn't really know the person very well, but supporting the family, you know?
Yeah.
When my dad died, I've got like three really close best friends. So I have one who I grew up with, and then I have one, well, actually I grew up with all of them, but one that is like, who was in Montreal at the time, one who was in Ontario, and or was she in Alberta? I don't know, somewhere. She wasn't close enough to come. Another one who also was in Montreal at the time. So when we were planning the funeral and stuff, one of the best friends that was in Montreal called me and said, "What can I do? What can I do for you? Like, what would help you right now?" And I said, "Just come to the funeral. That's all I need. I just need you to come to the funeral." And he said, "Oh, well, I don't know. I might be busy." And so he didn't come. And the friend that could not come, who was not in this province, sent her mom on her behalf, came. And she brought me like food and stuff. And the other friend who was in Montreal came, and she brought her mom with her. And so it was like a whole family coming to support me kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Except for the best friend that could have come but was too busy. And it took until his grandfather died and I went to his funeral for him to realize how important it was. And he apologized. It was 3 years he apologized because he finally realized. So he joined the club. So I was kind of and it meant a lot. It meant a lot to me. It was important, you know, that he finally apologized. I wasn't mad at him or anything, but I mean, I did notice.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yes, I've noticed as well, for sure, the way that people respond to grief. And I've really realized how, of all the things our culture is clueless about, grief is pretty high up on the list.
Well, I think it's just people aren't uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They're very uncomfortable with it. And to sit and know that you're not only having, like, you know, going to a funeral is not fun, right? So it's emotionally taxing for you, but it's a moment also where you have to put your needs second to the person who is grieving, right? Mm-hmm. And I think not everybody always has the emotional capacity to do that. I mean, even mm-hmm. me, it's like, I will drag ass, right? to go, still go. But, you know, I don't want to. I mean, I think about my great aunt's funeral, and my cousin was late. And I totally get it. I totally, like, we waited for her, but, like, I totally understand. Because she just, it's hard to get up and go. Yeah.
So I guess talking to people that have been through this process has been very, I don't know if healing is the word or helpful, but also even more so when I've talked with autistic people who have been through grief. What's been kind of your experience in talking with other autistic people about grief, in the sense that, like, we experience everything differently, you know, social mm-hmm. differences, communication differences, sensory differences. So it seems very logical we would have differences in the way that we respond to grief. What's kind of been your experience with that?
I think, like, you know, you kind of research things. You wanted to kind of get an idea. Like, yeah. And I think we tend to do that. And like I said, there was also, like, an element of preparation that I kind of felt that I thought I could do that doesn't work. But, yeah, not feeling bad or feeling shame, because you can't always access the feelings that you think you're supposed to. Or the, you know, there's expectations that you should be sad about something that you're not sad about, that something mm-hmm. else that nobody else is sad about is making you feel the loss the most, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that understanding, I think, that everybody is going to grieve in their own way and to leave space for it. I remember I was 13 when my grandfather died, and my dad was, for some reason, my family was very concerned about how I would take it. I'm not really sure why. He died actually the day after my birthday. So I came home from school, and my dad was home, and my mom was out, like, as she normally would be for work, but I can't remember. He explained that she was gone. And I remember my sister walked in the door, and she goes, "Grandpapa died, didn't he?" And my dad's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And I went in my room, and I just kept doing whatever. And I remember my dad came in, and he's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." And I remember him on the phone with my mom, because my mom had gone up to Rimouski to go and take care of things, and him going like, well, she's not crying, she didn't cry.
Yeah.
He completely confused, like, cause... but I didn't really cry with his death for whatever reason. I didn't feel that I had to. Whereas, kind of funny, I was much younger, but I cried a lot when my godfather's wife died. And I didn't even really know my godfather's wife. And so my parents were trying to understand. I was like maybe 9 or something. My parents were couldn't understand why I was crying so much for this person that I didn't really even know. And my mom had said, she goes, you know, funerals are for the living. And she goes, maybe you're crying for the pain of the people that you do know, my godfather, because I really love my godfather. And so for whatever reason, I cried like nuts for that one. Didn't really cry for my grandfather. So, hey, whatever. It's all normal.
Yeah. Did you feel like right now, I just feel like there was like act one of my life when my mom was here in the physical form, and now act two where when she's not. Did you feel those types of changes at all, like going through grief?
I think what changed my relationships with other people to some extent.
Yeah.
Because with his death, I realized what I was leaning on him for. I don't want to say depending, but I guess what I was using him for, the emotional support that I was using him for, that as an adult, I probably should have been going to like my husband or other people for.
Mm-hmm.
And so his death kind of brought that to light, where I realized I was emotionally quite dependent on him. So it didn't harm my relationship with my husband, but I think it made me realize that there was something missing in the way that I was relating to my husband, and that I was using my father for what I probably should have been using my husband for. And there's different reasons for that. And my husband was not emotionally available the way that my father was. It's as simple as that. And so that change, you know, that kind of shift where I'm like, well, at some point, either you or somebody else has to become emotionally available to me, because yeah, you can't be speaking to the void. And it was necessary. So there was a bit of, I guess, a bit of grief over that, in the sense of, well, I hadn't let go, like I hadn't cut the cord, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's not, you know, it might not have been a healthy relationship, healthy connection with my dad. So yeah, for me, that's what it kind of brought to light. And then as well, the fact that I don't want to end up like him. He died at 70, right? And he had thought that he was going to retire and do all the things he wanted to do, like travel and stuff like that, in his retirement, which obviously did not happen because he was sick. And so his death made me want to live more. And that's why I go and I go on my vacations and I go on my cruises and I go and I have a good time, because I don't want to wait. Like, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
My midlife was at 35. Let's say I were to die at 70, just like him, like my midlife was at 35. So I'm like, I'm past my midlife now. I need to live. Yeah. That's kind of, I think, I don't think that's quite what you asked, but that's kind of the lesson that I took from it.
Are you experiencing joy differently now? I'm hearing you talk about the going on all the cruises, and every time you tell me you're going on a cruise, I'm like, oh wow, that's exciting. And you know, in some ways it can be more affordable than I think people realize, you know, with payment plans and things like that. But did it change your view on joy?
I think it, not just joy, but just the way I live my life, that I would rather, and this is like with business, this is with everything, I would rather try something and fail than live with regret later on that I hadn't done something, or that I don't want to say missing out, because that's not what it is. It's more like take those chances because I'd rather fail than be on my deathbed and be like, you know what, I probably should have tried to do that. I now I'll never know whether I would have failed or would have succeeded, you know, or whether that would have been fun or would have been crap. Like, who knows? So I kind of live with the idea that, like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it now while I can. While my legs are working, I'm going to go and walk. Like, that kind of thing. Like, that's how I kind of feel when I'm having a shitty day or something. You kind of be like, you know what? Everything, my body is still working. It is still carrying me places I need to go. So take advantage of it.
And get those feelings out.
Yeah. And try to... but. I try not to feel guilty on the days where you don't feel like it, when you want to lie in bed. That's okay too. Rest is important. You need to take care of yourself. And that's kind of how I feel. Like, I want to take care of myself, that I have, that as long as I can, then I'm going to have a life that I can do the things that I want to do. Mm-hmm.
Did things change for you socially at all? Like, right now, ever since these last couple of months, is like, I've been fearful of being around people that I know, and they're either going to not pretend, but like won't even think about like how, like, I'm a different person than I was before. Like, I can't ever not go back. So I've been fearful socially in regards to that and having those conversations. Or when I bring, or like when people ask me how I'm doing, like, I'm doing really bad. And like, you know, things are going to get real awkward real quick if I don't mask and I'm authentic about things. It's not going to be a fun time being around Doug if we actually start to get into this discussion when, like, kind of like how you said, if you're not part of the grief club, like, you're probably not going to enjoy a conversation with me right about now if we're going to be authentic and we're going to be, you know, like, going to be honest about what's going on. You're going to feel pretty uncomfortable pretty quick.
Well, I think, yeah. So, I mean, I know that I have the capacity to hold that space for people, for those uncomfortable things. One of the most powerful things that one of my best friends did, the one that was in Montreal who showed up and stuff, what she did for me in the days after my father died, and it seemed like when I called her and told her my dad was dead, it seemed like she was more in shock initially than I was. It was kind of strange. She felt deeply for me, and she's like, you know, I'm coming over, and she kind of just came over, and she's like, what do you want? And I'm like, I don't know what I want. I just told her a restaurant. She picked me up food. I just kind of lay there. I didn't feel like eating. But she just came and sat beside me, and she held my hand in silence while I cried. And that was it. That was like one of the most powerful things that she could have done for anyone. And I think what makes people so uncomfortable is that idea of being able to cradle or support somebody else's emotions, or just to have that space, like, just to let people have their moment, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what she did for me. You know, I didn't know what I needed. I didn't need anything else. I didn't need somebody to sit there and be like, oh, it's okay, you know, oh, you're gonna, you know,
yeah,
all the platitudes. She just sat there with me. And I think if more people had that understanding that sometimes there's nothing really that you can say that is useful. Sometimes just acknowledging the person's pain and giving them the space to express something or not is the best thing you can do. Mm-hmm. You don't have to walk. We're not that fragile. Like, we've just been through hell. So, you know, you don't need to be handled with kid gloves. We don't need to dance around it and pretend that nothing has happened. Something did happen, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Something definitely did happen, and we're making it day by day. And yeah, just being there, like, and I don't know, I guess maybe I have some feelings of anger because, like, it, you know, it's tough where it's like someone doesn't know what you need unless you tell them. So I get that, like, advocate for your needs. And, you know, I understand that. being autistic, like that's something I have to do on a daily basis anyway. But it really sucks that you have to do that in this state, and people can't just try to just be around or check in. Like, yeah, like these days I don't really have the capacity to check in with everyone else. Like that's always like, that's usually me like initiating communication. I don't have that capacity these days. So it would just be nice if people would just check in a little bit more and just try to be there. And yeah, like you said, they don't need to say anything. Like there's nothing they're going to tell me, like, especially for those that aren't part of the grief club, there's not really much they're going to be able to tell me that's going to make things better, but just them being there makes things better, or them just sending a text makes things better.
That can be difficult, because I know, like, for me, sometimes on anniversaries and stuff, my mom and that friend, who's really great, like, she would send me a text or a message, I was fine until you asked, you know? So there's like, and I think that's what's hard. I think that's what's hard with grief for other people, is that, yeah, it's unpredictable, because, yeah, you might, like, sometimes you just want to go through the day and ignore it.
Yeah.
And other days, like, you don't want to be asked, and then other days you want to be asked, right? So.
Yeah. It's not funny, but I had a similar situation, like, a month after. So I have a friend, and she has an incredible memory, is neurodivergent, and she doesn't even know it, but that's a whole other story. And she remembers dates, like anniversaries, dates, birthdays. She just remembers everything. So a month after, yeah, I had been in like constant communication with her about that, you know, her husband just recently passed away. Her mom had passed away a couple years ago. So she was very empathetic of what I was going through. And a month after my mom passed away to the day, she texted me and she says, "I can't believe it's a month since your mom hasn't been here." I'm like, "Oh, damn, it has been a month." And it's like, oh, my goodness. And then, yeah, it kind of spiraled me a little bit that day. So now I'm gonna remember, I think, always the specific day thanks to her. So it just hits in different ways, so nothing I can do about.
It's hard, like, it's, yeah, there's like, it's hard because it's not the person's fault either. It's like,
no, and she was amazing and been so helpful.
Yeah. So yeah, you never know. Like, it might have been like, oh, it's great, somebody remembered, and the other days you're like, crap, like, it's fine.
Don't let me remember. I don't want to remember.
Yeah, or sometimes, like, I think there's something, I don't know, maybe it's a neurodivergent thing. I don't know. I think I have a bit of rejection sensitive kind of thing, or maybe demand opposition. I'm not really sure what it is, what to call it. There's times when I don't want the attention. Mm-hmm. When, yeah, I just don't want it. And I've been thinking about it recently because it's interesting and how quickly I will shut down. So up here in Canada, I've been on a TV network called AMI. I do a monthly segment, but I'm actually like on a show, like on a series now, and it's coming out in January. So we did the promo for it at the beginning of the month. And after I did the promo, I like went into this, like, I have to like delete everybody off Facebook. I have to like hide. Like, every time I do something that's more, I don't know, like forward facing, like something that's more like media attention, I hide more. Like, yeah. I just want to cocoon and hide more. I don't want anybody to find, which is really opposite, right? Because it's like, well, you're on TV and everybody can see you. And now you're like, no, I want to hide. I don't want to, I'm like, going to go in my shell. And so, like, it's just interesting concept. I don't really know what it is or what to call it, or if it's a mental health issue or what it is. But
I think it's a common thing, part of the autistic experience, because on the rare occasion that I've been on TV or even like on social media, when if I post something and then it gets a decent amount of attention and like people will comment, I'm like, no, damn, Doug, what the hell did you do? Come on.
It's so weird. It's like, why are we running a podcast?
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, like, or, you know, or I think it is because, like, so often we get attention that we don't want, like negative, you know, like judgments. And so if we don't do stuff like post things on social media or go on TV shows, or if you're up on stage talking about, you know, neurodiversity in the workplace and things like that, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, well, then we won't get any attention. But then,
yeah,
you know, it's, yeah, so.
So, yeah, I don't know, for whatever reason, sometimes I think grief can be like that for me, where mm-hmm. I don't want anybody to recognize, like, I don't want you to message me, I don't want you, like. Because I do things in my own way. Like, there were some years, especially the year after my dad died, where I did not want to be here, like, in Montreal for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Did not want to be here on the death anniversary, which is in January. I would book myself away. Like, I would leave the country, literally, because I just didn't want to be here. And the cruise that were actually going on leaves on his, not the death anniversary, but it leaves on the day that he was, the first funeral we had here in Montreal. We had a second funeral in Barbados. That was tough too. Don't have two funerals.
Like, I can't imagine. Yeah.
Like, don't have to do that twice. I mean, we had to, because there was family in both places. But anyway, yeah, like, I just tend to want to be away. Not always. So, I mean, now it's been, like I said, it's been almost 13 years. I don't run all the way all the time. But there were many years where that was my tradition. And part of it was also, like, he loved to travel and he wanted to travel more. And so for me, traveling, especially on his death anniversary, makes sense. I'm like, hey, Dad, here I am. I'm over here now. Where do you, you know? And when he was alive, I used to call him from places. And I used to love that, like, the fact that I could call him from someplace, especially like places that he had been, and then, hey, Dad, I'm at Waterloo Station right now. And he's like, oh, great, you know, and it was cool. So travel is like a way that I kind of share that with him. And we also put his ashes in the ocean in Barbados. And so for me, I always envision it that, like, he's all over the world now, that little bits of him have ended up all over the world. And so when I'm in near the sea or I'm near water, there's like a little bit of him there. Me.
Yeah, with the holidays going on now, I've been really, like, there was one I don't want to even celebrate Thanksgiving to begin with, just because of the issues of that day. I don't believe in that day. But beyond that, like, yeah, I was really dreading that experience. And now the holidays and Christmas and Christmas Eve coming up, I'm really dreading that, and really dreading New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, really dreading Mother's Day, really dreading my mom's birthday, like, yeah, just all that stuff. Yeah, it's just a lot, each one of those moments, it seems like.
What are you gonna do? Do you have plans? Did you figure out what you're gonna do with yourself?
Well, I went to my uncle's house with my dad and my brothers on that day, on the day they call Thanksgiving here in the United States. And when I was that, you know, I did it, but I didn't really want to do it. And Hanukkah, I kind of punted on that this year because I only kind of went through that because of my mom, kind of those, you know, that ritual. So I just didn't do that this year. And now with my wife, you know, Christmas Eve and Christmas, I'm going to go with her to those things. And, you know, I normally love seeing my nieces and stuff, but really, you know, I don't want to do it, but I am, just to, you know, for her, but not going to do anything for New Year's Eve for sure. I'm just going to hide in my house. And anyway, I don't find a lot of value in those moments either. But for all these things, if it was up to me, I think I would have just hid under my blanket and try to sleep the day away. So I don't know. Like, I don't know. It feels like every time I do one of these things, like, maybe it's a step forward in the right direction. I don't know. I really have no idea.
But can make new rituals. You can kick out 2023 and say, well, that was a shit year, and just kick it out.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't have to be a celebration. It can be like a purging.
Yes.
like no more of that.
Yeah.
Or what I used to do sometimes is I used to make my father's favorite cake. It was a jelly roll on mm-hmm. his birthday. Or I would have a cup of tea in my best china. My wonderful china set that I don't take out except for special occasions. And that was on his behalf, you know? So like things like that, that I would.
Yeah.
Sometimes I forget though. Now I forget.
I've definitely been thinking about like new rituals and creating those things. And most of the time, nothing is coming to me. So, but I'm hoping as the months go forward, that I'll continue to talk to more autistic people about grief and things like that. And I really appreciate you for talking with me about this and asking, hey, are you ready to talk about grief? I really appreciate you asking. And, you know, just having this conversation is part of the healing process and really grateful for it.
Thank you, even though I cried more than you did.
I'll be crying after we get off of the Zoom. Definitely been feeling a lot of emotions in our conversation. So thanks so much. And thanks everyone for listening.